We are here because we know the outcomes in our lives are within our control. That taking absolute ownership of how we eat, sleep, train, think, and connect with each other is how we'll optimize our health and happiness. That chasing excellence is how we grab hold of what is possible. Our mission is to live on the run, always chasing, never stopping.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of Chasing Excellence. As always, here with Ben. How are you, sir?
Doing really good. Thanks, Patrick.
Awesome. Today we are returning to one of my favorite formats, but also the format I realized as we were kind of getting ready to log on today. This is now the format that gives me the most anxiety. This is the one that actually creates, I actually get nervous before we record these. The only thing equal to it is like if we have a Ryan Holiday or somebody similar on, where I'm like, I just don't want to sound like an idiot. And so now Hopper Talk and Ryan Holiday are the two. We've been doing this for like 3 or 4 years. So I don't get too nervous logging on and starting these, but Hopper Talk still does it for me now.
That's great.
Yeah,
that's good. It means that means you care.
That's right, and it means it's pushing me beyond my comfort zones, which is useful and necessary. And so, for folks who are new, Hopper Talk is when I pull random questions off the internet, often from Reddit, and then you and I kind of trade answers. And these are not they're similar to Chasing Excellence type questions, but sometimes they're quite random. And we just kind of see where we land and see if we agree and see how far apart we are if we do not. Cool?
Let's do it.
All right, we got 5 questions today. The first one, I'll let you go first. What is a scam that most people don't realize is a scam?
So I'll answer this with the same, because it's the same question Bodhi, my 9-year-old, asked me 2 days ago. If you were president, what law would you make? So first off, it's cool that he just thinks he thinks the president makes the laws. I just love that. But this is the same answer, because I think it's a scam. I think it's
okay, hit me.
It's added charges, added fees.
Mm-hmm. Like baggage fees and
so like any like you go to a resort or a hotel and you stay, and at the end, it's not just like you booked a room for, you know, $149 a night. At the end, it's like resort fee and taxes, and there's all these different line items. And it's just a scam. It's like when I run my business, it's not like, well, we charge $200 for membership. And then when it goes to charge them, I don't go, and here's the facility fee, and here's the coaching fee, and here's the water fee, and here's the parking fee, and here's the... And this happens on everything, on your phone bill, on where you, it's like, it's everywhere. And it's just a scam. So if I was president, that's what I would do. I would eliminate, I would have it so the price you see, and it's up to the provider to figure out what the true total cost is. But they have to be rolled in. Like if there's a resort fee, cool, let us know that before we buy it. You can't tell me that after I bought it. So that's a scam. If I was president, it'd be gone.
Day one, executive order number one.
And I wouldn't run on that. That would not be my campaign, because I would not
get any. People might vote you. Vote
people for you might, but reason. I wouldn't get any backing from any of the big corporate ones, which are the ones that actually move the needle. Yeah.
This isn't the same thing, but what I thought about and which annoys me is when you go to a hotel and they charge you a Wi-Fi fee.
That's the same thing.
No, yeah. I mean, it's the same thing. It's kind of like it's a voluntary add-on charge at least, but it's still obnoxious. Like $20 to log onto the internet.
If you provide the internet, tell us you provide the internet and then involve it in, but charge me $20 more. It happens in colleges. We pay, you know, tens of thousands of dollars for our kids to go to college. And then we get an extra bill at the end for like the parking fee and for the administrative fees and for the uniform fee for their lacrosse kit. It's like, just roll it in.
Yeah.
Don't add it on at the end. I'll give another one that like is popping in my head now that my dad brought to light that once, because it's one of these things that, like once you see it, you can't unsee it. And that just pisses you off. So now that I'm pissed off, I want the rest of everybody like listening to be pissed. I'm turning into a grumpy old man.
Yes.
Good question, Patrick. Is what he brought to light was when you call somebody and they don't answer and you get voicemail,
Mm-hmm.
It could just say, leave a message at the tone. Beep. Yep. But it doesn't. What's it say? You've reached the working phone number of 123-456-7-8-9. At the end of the call, you can hang up or press 1 for more options. So what they've done is they've taken something that requires you 3 seconds and made it 15 seconds so they can get the extra 15 seconds of data charges every single time. Over time, that adds up to massive amounts of extra fees that they can charge. That's and it's the only reason they do it. Everyone knows you can hang up when you're done calling. Like, you don't have to tell me that. You don't have to tell me the number I reached. I just called it. Like, it's crazy.
That's so
it's just say, leave a message at the tone. Beep.
Yep. I haven't left a voicemail in like 10 years.
I don't have voicemail on my phone.
Yeah, I think I do. I don't particularly pay much attention to it, though. That's so funny. Yeah, now that's going to annoy me every time I'm actually.
Yep. Sorry.
Actually, that's all right. That's funny. All right. That's funny. Okay. So, the scam that most people don't realize is a scam might annoy some people. And I don't know that I technically would call it a scam, but I'm going to go with it anyways, which is supplements. Almost every supplement I think is a scam. And I haven't always believed this, mostly because I didn't pay much attention to it. And I've definitely bought supplements in the past. I haven't for a while, but this comes mostly from my work with EC on the Consistency Project podcast, which if I had to like really like kind of tongue in cheek summarize what the show is, it's EC taking something that is kind of in the waters of like, oh, you should do this. You should try keto. We just actually recorded today an episode on fish oil and omega-3s and omega-6s. And, you know, this is like, you've got to do this. And like, this is the thing. And she kind of systematically goes through the research. And almost every single time, I'm not exaggerating, almost every single time what she comes away with is the science isn't there to back this up. And the research doesn't say what the marketing says, right? Almost every single time, no matter what the subject is. And I don't think she's going in to debunk. She's not going in to poo-poo all these things. She's going
in
to
Mythbusters.
No, it's not. It's like, I think she's genuinely like, let me see if this makes any sense. And there are a couple things which she says, you know, cool, thumbs up, like, you know, creatine, for example, like there's some science, there's some research, like, okay, that seems like but almost everything else is, marketing, and almost everything else is a story.
Yep.
Being sold to somebody who is worried that they're not doing something that they should be doing. And I'm really just kind of taking all this from stuff I've learned from EC over the last couple of years. But she has this term that I love called the worried well, which is all of us who like we eat well, we go to the gym, we work out, we sleep as much as we can. But we're constantly being sold this idea that like, well, maybe keto's the answer, or well, you really need to take this fish oil, or this beta alanine's really going to help you in the gym. When time and time again, it's, well, you should probably just eat more fruits and vegetables. You should probably just eat more whole food and protein. And that is going to be the biggest lever you have in short-term performance and long-term performance, in short-term aesthetics and long-term aesthetics. And everything else is abdicating responsibility to doing the difficult work of eating real foods and probably cooking for yourself more than you would like to. It's like this idea like, oh, all these magic pills. If you just stack these magic pills, you don't have to do the difficult thing of like cooking some chicken and eating some vegetables and, you know, drinking enough water and going to bed. And we just keep getting sold these little magic pills that keep selling us on the idea that, well, we could be a little bit healthier and wouldn't that be great?
But there's those get jacked guys in the magazine that like, that use the MPH powder.
Yeah.
You know, and there's like, and it's so much easier, Patrick, to take a pill.
It is so much easier. And one of the things she points out is like, we, especially like in our community, right. And the people who are listening, we have this sort of knee jerk reaction against like big pharma. Right. And again, most of that is fine. I'm not going to argue against that. But when you actually look at it, big pharma has far, far, far more stringent rules and regulations that they have to follow. Whereas supplements have zero. They have none. They can say anything. The thing, whatever you're taking could be practically anything. Whereas these other things that were like, oh, bad, big pharma, bad. Like, they've had to go through years and years in of R&D to prove that the thing that they're selling is the thing, it does the thing that they say it does. Now, again, I'm not saying everyone needs to go take, you know, whatever pills. That's not it at all. I'm just merely saying, like, we so quickly cast medicine aside, and we so quickly embrace marketing. Yeah. And like, we look at people like, you're crazy for thinking that fish oil is not the greatest thing in the world. When truthfully, there's not a lot of evidence to say that it is.
Right. Yeah. I think that, you know, you pointed to creatine. I think creatine and caffeine are probably the only two that I've come across as supplements that actually move the needle for what you're trying to do, whether it's, you know, build muscle, create energy, whatever it is. Like, those, those two things work. They're real. But everything, like, back in the day, it was pregnant people should be taking folic acid. And then it was EPA, DHA, you know, omega-3s. Yeah. And then it was the latest, you know, now it's vitamin D. And then it became probiotics. And, you know, and then it's, you know, the gut health. And it all comes back to the really simple but hard thing of vegetables, fruit, and lean proteins.
Yep.
It's a good one.
That's my scam.
It's a good one.
Well, credit to EC, because she's been teaching me a lot about this stuff the last couple of years. So, all right, next one. Next question. What weird thing would you make socially acceptable if you could?
You're first.
All right. I'm going to harken back to one. I think maybe it was the first Hopper Talk. We talked about naps. And we talked, like, the question was like, should naps be something more, something or other? And I argued that, or I tried to make the case that naps should be. And I'm sticking with it, man, because I actually just read a book. It's right next to me. It's called Rest. It was the last book I read last year. It's by Alex Sojung Kim Pang, P-A-N-G. It had been sitting on my shelf for a while, and I don't know why. I just grabbed it like late December, and I read through it. And it was probably one of the best books I read last year.
Oh, wow.
And so I was thinking about that. I have been thinking about that, thinking about this question. And I just came back to, like, naps are something that we only give credence to if you're a kindergartner, right? Like, my kid right now is probably, no, he's actually up from his nap now. Like, that's the only socially acceptable nap now,
right?
Is if you're like 18 months or 2 years old, when the truth is, they can be incredibly useful tools in rehabilitation, in recovery, in focus, and in memory. All these things, studies have found that naps, when done well, not just like a random 3-hour nap in the afternoon, but when done with some intelligence, with some intention, can be incredibly powerful levers to enhance performance and enhance focus and creativity, which are all things obviously that I think a lot about. And the other reason why I really liked it, and the reason that this is kind of my weird thing that I'd make acceptable, is something I've been thinking about a lot. And I just kind of wrote about it a little bit on Instagram, which is this first hour, last hour rule that I've been trying to work on for the last couple months. And the rule is, like, what I came to realize, and this is just, obviously just personally, but I don't think I'm wrong that a lot of people struggle with, which is the first hour of the day and the last hour of the day. The first hour of the day, we often just kind of stumble through, and we've talked about this a little bit before. I think we did a decent episode on this idea, but we kind of just stumble through. We wake up, we look at Instagram, we like slowly make coffee, we take a 25-minute shower, and all of a sudden the rest of the world is awake and now we're at work or whatever. And so we waste that first hour. And then the last hour of the day, what do we tend to do? Kids go to sleep if you got kids. But oftentimes you just get on the couch, watch Netflix, drink something, watch too much Netflix, and go to bed too late. And so what I realized just for myself was, like, if I want to get better, however I define that, however you would define that, those are the 2 hours that we have the most potential. That first hour, because nobody's awake yet, if you wake up a little bit earlier than you'd like. And that last hour when nobody's expecting anything of you. If you take advantage of those times, those can be the times at which you work out, you meal prep, you read, you start a side hustle, you do what all of these things that we're all like, oh, I wish I had time to do. Like, those are the 2 hours that we could do it. And so I was thinking about that as it relates to this question and naps. And I was like, well, with that in mind, what a nap would do, like a 20 to 30 minute nap, if you could figure out how to live your life in such a way that you could pull that off, that would allow you to get up 30 minutes or 45 minutes or an hour earlier in the day when no emails are coming in, nobody's calling you, nobody's texting you, nothing interesting is on social media, like all the things that distract us and pull from us when we do get up. If you can take that time and say, I'm going to front load the day and use that hour, and I'm going to take some of it back at after lunch. I'll take a 30 minute nap, which is really all I think is necessary and needed. You could really move the needle for yourself by kind of reallocating some of that wasted time in the morning. And yeah, maybe you're a little bit tired, so you grab a little nap in the middle of the day.
That's great.
That's my thing.
I dig it. I love it. I'm not a napper, but I might be now.
Yeah, I would like to also say I haven't figured out how to do this yet. This is aspirational to me. But I will say, and the reason I thought about it as being socially acceptable, because I did, like, this was before kids. This was like maybe 6 or 7 years. My girlfriend then, my wife and I, living together in Boston, and just for the hell of it, I was like, I would just work from home. Like, I literally never left the apartment, and she would leave in the morning and come back and just fucking be in the same place. And I was like, I'm going to try it for a week. I'm just going to like take a nap in the middle of the day. And I did it, and it was wonderful. And then I told her about it like on Friday, and she hasn't let me live it down yet. I tried it like for 4 days. She'll tell anybody about it that 1 week that I took a nap. And it's like, well, don't give me crap about it. I'm trying something. So anyways.
That's cool. Okay. Can you read the question again? I want to make sure I answer this right.
What weird thing would you make socially acceptable if you could?
Okay. First thing that pops in my mind is, it's why I smiled when you said naps, is I'm just going to take it from the opposite spin, is sleeping in. And this is somebody, I get up at 5:25 every morning. Like every morning I'm up at 5:25 because I want to own those first 3 or 4 hours of my day. Like I just want, it's so important to me, but sleep is such a challenge for me because, as you said, the world wakes up and the world starts at, and this is the problem to me, is if you read like Matthew Walker, you know, when schools have gotten earlier and earlier and earlier, and because of that, we're more and more sleep deprived, and sleep is just such a massive, it's one of our five pillars. It's a huge, huge thing. I love that you pulled in naps. I was just going about it from a different point of view, which is let's just get the full night to sleep. So to me, I think that we should all be waking up without an alarm. Me, you, our kids, every other animal on planet Earth does this. Nobody else is like interrupting their sleep. Matthew Walker says it really cool. He's like, imagine if aliens came down and then they would look back and like explained what we did at night to their other people. Like they had this elaborate routine where they stand in front of mirrors and, you know, scrub their mouths and, you know, they put on these different clothes and they lie down and close their eyes for a long time. And then they have this machine that, you know, blares them out of this deep unconsciousness. It's like, why do we do that? And so what I would do is it'd take a lot more than just like making something acceptable. I would change, maybe this, if I was president, this would be the second thing I would do is honestly, like, no schools, no work starts before 10 a.m.
Yeah, that's so interesting. I'm up early like you, and the road that goes by here, a school bus goes by, and it's always dark. I'm like, why is anybody on a school bus at 7 o'clock or whatever time?
Like school buses come at 7:15.
Yeah.
It's crazy. And there's Matthew Walker, there's all these studies of when they moved school times earlier, what happened to SAT scores, and then they moved them back, you know, when they move back in these small increments, 30 minutes to 40 minutes, what happens to SAT scores? I mean, it's amazing. Daylight savings, when we get that one extra hour of sleep, heart attacks go down by 20%. When we lose an hour of sleep, heart attacks go up that day by 20%. I mean, it's just like, it's insanity. So
it's insane.
That's the thing that I would do, is make sleeping in to your needs, whatever that is, acceptable.
Yeah. Why are schools, why do they start so early? Is it just so that like you can get the kid out of the house so you can go to work? Is it all just based around
people have to be at work early. Yes. Yeah. It's that whole thing. It's the work thing. So because people require people at work. Now I get it. Like, I mean, it's the whole thing snowballs, right? So
yeah, totally.
We have to get our kids to work at a certain time so we can go to work. Well, yep. And then we have to run classes at 5 a.m. because people are going to work so early. And it's like, we're creating this terrible cycle on top of ourselves.
Yeah.
But if nothing happened before 10, just, you know, we don't need a 40-hour work week. You know, if we can figure out how to be more productive, which is another thing that would make more acceptable, is I think that Slack and email are the biggest distractions. You know, if you read Deep Work, Cal Newport, there's a really cool, it's kind of like The Mind Explained or something like that on Netflix. There's a Netflix thing called Explained. Yep, and one of the things is about focus. And I shared it with my whole team, my whole staff. And it's, they talk about the interruptions at work and what Slack does and what email does. So this would be the other thing that would be totally weird and not acceptable right now, but you don't need to respond to email.
Yeah.
So I used to, when I was growing up in high school, my best friend, I would go to his house and, you know, I'd eat over his house like you do. You eat at your friend's house for dinner. And we'd all be sitting around the table. I'd be sitting with his family and the phone would ring. And no one would get up and answer it. And I was like, why are you not answering the phone? And I literally asked the dad. I was like, Mr. Mullen, why aren't you answering the phone? He goes, the phone is for our convenience, not for theirs.
Mm-hmm.
That stuck with me forever.
Yeah.
The phone is for my convenience, not theirs. It's not allowed to interrupt me. And I brought that into the workplace. Like, you're not allowed. Email is not allowed. Slack is not allowed to interrupt me in my workflow.
Yeah.
And it'd be so much better if that was an acceptable thing. If you really need something from somebody, so Jeff Bezos does this. You're not allowed to you're not allowed to throw things out. In meetings, you have to write a minimum 7-page report to present something.
Yep. And then don't they start the meeting? Everybody reads it, right?
Yep. Exactly. Everyone reads the 7-page report. Now, all the trivial little interruptions, you have to really think about something before you want to interrupt somebody.
Yeah.
And now they're dealing with the big issues, not the little small ones. Yep. And they're getting crap done. Like, man, that's like the amount of interruption that we have in our lives. And now we're sleep deprived on top of it. Yep. Like,
So we're constantly reactive now.
So now what you have to do is you have to work 40, 50, 60 hours because you're unproductive, because you're bouncing around and there's transition cost to everything you do. You're plugging away doing your work and boom, text message, you're plugging. Yep. Now transition cost. And now you got to recalibrate.
Yep.
Oh man, the cost of switching.
Yep.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, that's a great point. I hadn't thought about it, but weird thing that makes socially acceptable. I genuinely, and like, not everybody, of course, because there are edge cases, but like 5 to 6 hours of actual work, like real actual work. That's it.
Yeah.
Go home early, get there, like whatever it is. You do not get more than that amount of actual work done. Most people get about 4 hours of work done. Most of us spend too much time in what Cal Newport calls the hyperactive hive mind, which is like, inbox, notification, text message.
Busy, constantly
context switching, constantly kicking the soccer ball of responsibility back to somebody else, like your turn now. And if you actually pay attention to how much real work you do, not pinging around of pseudo work to things that feel like work but aren't productive, you're getting about 4 to 6 hours tops.
Let's just make that acceptable. That's you, Patrick. That is not the workplace. Mm. The workplace, I think the estimates are way, way lower than that.
Way lower? Yeah.
You'll actually like this. So you'll like what we set up. So we've created a weekly workflow. So the way we do this is Mojo Mondays. Mondays is all about us coming together as a team to make sure that we're on the same page of what makes us amazing. And we have a culture meeting every Monday. It's 45 minutes that we become the best versions of ourselves. Tuesday is Team Tuesdays. This is where you meet with your team. Everyone has a scheduled team meeting. Wednesdays are deep work Wednesdays. You are not allowed to have a meeting. You're not allowed to email somebody. You're not allowed to respond to anyone's emails. You are only here to do work. No interruptions.
Mm-hmm.
Thursdays are Thorough Thursdays. Thorough Thursdays is where you can, again, meet with your team, have meetings, do your stuff, get stuff done. hopefully you can get everything done in your week, done in those 4 days.
Yeah.
Because if you do, you have Freedom Fridays where you can do what you want to do. If you want to come to the office, cool. But there's no, if you want to answer emails, you can, but there's no meetings allowed.
Yep.
There's no meetings because then you are taking someone else's time and saying, I need you here. So meetings are only allowed on Mondays, Tuesdays, and Thursdays. Wednesdays and Fridays, there's no meetings. Wednesdays, there's no nothing. Middle of the week, you got to get your deep work done. And Fridays are free. We're at the point where if you got all your work done and you're responsible for your key objectives, your quarterly rocks. We have numbers. Make sure you're doing your work. We're tasking you. We're holding accountability on a weekly, quarterly basis. If you're getting it done and you want to go skiing on Friday, you want to go for a walk, you want to take a yoga class, you want to take a master class, you want to be at your kid's soccer game, go for it. Don't even ask permission. Go for it. Now, we have urgent things that need to get done. So if you work the front desk, you have to be at the front desk. If you're coaching a class, you have to be at the – if you have to post something on social, you have to post something on social. If you have to put out program, you put out programming. But other than that, free form. So we've got this kind of like autonomy, shorter work week, but an opportunity at least for a full Wednesday. If you don't even want, you know, Fridays, if you don't want to come in the office, don't come in the office. Wednesday, we're saying come into the office, do it here. But, you know, because I believe in the living, breathing thing needs living and breathing things. If we want our business to be a living, breathing thing, which is a team, we need to be here present in with other people. So I'm, as much as I am about autonomy and no distractions, I'm not a fan of remote work.
Yeah. Yeah. We've talked about that. What I actually like about that, because on the surface, you'd be like, oh, just let them stay home. But what I really like about that is that when you're in a room with other people doing deep work, it helps you get into deep work and it helps you focus more because you look around and you think, right, but this is what we do here.
Yes.
This is today is this. Yes. Right. Yeah. We don't fumble around. We don't. Yeah. There's less distractions. Yeah. Yes. I love that. And I'd also say
it creates a group flow state.
Exactly. Yeah. Without doing anything except everybody get their head down, get their work done.
Yes.
And on Friday, I love that the idea, like if you've got responsibility, like, cause there's always that balance. Like if you want freedom, then you've got responsibilities to earn that freedom. Right. Yeah. So if you've got to do some stuff, that's on you. You've got to get it done. But assuming you do that, you've got the freedom otherwise to take a deep breath and do what you got to do or do what you want to do. I love that. Have you looked at Basecamp at all? The app or I don't know if it's called an app, but it's an app.
I don't know. No, I'm not familiar with Basecamp. I'm familiar with Jason Friedman and Joel, is it? I've read a couple of their books.
Yeah.
That's actually what spurred a lot of that. Cool.
Yeah, I think they wrote Rework.
Another great one, follow-up. Great, great follow-up. I actually like it better than Rework. It's called It Doesn't Have to Be Crazy at Work.
Oh, that's cool. I didn't know that.
It's
amazing. Or is that, did I just miss it?
I have a couple copies of it here somewhere.
All good. Basecamp is kind of built around project management and communication. And I don't really use it. I've used it in the past. I was actually randomly just looking at it today, which is why it popped in my head. But it's kind of this like anti-Slack, anti-email tool that everything kind of lives inside of. And so it's not hyperactive hive mind, but it still allows you the tools necessary to work. Because 37 signals, I think is what it's called. They're a completely distributed workforce. And so they need the ability to communicate across time zones, right? And so that's what they've kind of built. But anyways, it strikes me that maybe that's a tool worth, again, looking at.
Yeah, we've used Monday. Monday, I think, it's the same thing. It's a project management tool. And it actually, for me, this is the way me, it was so much managing the software that became a distraction from the actual work itself. So I'm not against it. If it works for an individual or a team, I think that's phenomenal. It just wasn't that type of format doesn't work well with me.
Yep. Cool. Super cool. Love all that. And kudos to you guys because that's what's necessary. That's what's needed. Okay. Next question. What are some oddly specific signs that someone is a good person?
Okay. Oddly specific. Somebody that doesn't walk by, but picks up trash, litter, you know, so they're walking,
that's a great one.
I don't, you know, like through the office and there's a stray napkin near the trash and they pick it up. I think that's just, you know, it's oddly specific, but
yep.
Like that's a good person. Yep. They're looking for the greater good. They're taking responsibility. They realize that they're not a bystander in this thing, that they can help and contribute. And they're not just kind of in their own heads doing their own thing.
Love that.
You know, similar to that is like maybe similar, but different is you're walking through and you find, you know, not litter, but you find money, like trash, or like not trash, but like valuables,
cash
money, yo. More money, more problems. And instead of pocketing it, they try to return it. You know, they try to find the rightful owner. And maybe this stuck with me because, again, thing from my past, there was when I was probably around 10 years old, that's why I remember it anyway, two of my really good friends, found $800 floating around in the air at the park at the jungle gym.
Yep.
Like it was just blowing around. And I was like, oh my God, like $800 when you're 10 years old is like
8 million.
A gazillion. It's like, yeah. You can't wrap your head around it. But they went to the police station and tried to return it. And I was like, whoa, that really resonated. And it stuck with me. Nobody came to claim it. So the police actually gave it back to them. And that probably even furthered it to me. Like, they did the right thing, but it paid off in the end. And, you know, like, yep, back to them. I always thought that's like a thing, is like people that pick up trash or valuables and try to do the right thing with them. Mm-hmm. Love that. What about you?
I've got two as well. The first one is totally self-serving because it's something that I do. So
you're
just reinforcing my own self-identity. So I don't know if it's actually true, but so the first one is
they host people podcasts. Oddly specific. People,
that is oddly specific. People who, when like you're walking, you know, down the road or you're in a place, who smile at little kids and dogs when they kind of like walk like past you, like, right? Like engage with that. It baffles me when somebody walks by a little kid and like they just like nothing on their face. Like little, like if a little kid doesn't make you smile, then I don't know what you're doing with your life. And I just extend that to dogs too, because I love dogs. And so that's the first thing. And then the second one is something that I actually saw a friend of mine do. And as I was thinking about this question, I was like, yeah, that was oddly specific. And we were waiting for a train. This was years ago. We were waiting for a train and he noticed that somebody like way down the track a little bit had like the tag of their t-shirt sticking up. It was just like, you know, how it happens. And all he like, no, didn't make a thing of it. Just tapped him on the shoulder. Hey, your tag's up. That's it. Just like, that was it. That was the whole thing. And the guy's like, oh, thanks. And I was like, one, I would just, that's not something I would ever think to do. But in reflecting on it, it's like, what a nice thing to do, to just be like, hey, you got a little toilet paper on your shoes, or like you got something in your teeth, or like that thing. Like I'm going to instigate a little bit of an awkward thing so that you're not walking through the world, in a way that might be embarrassing or awkward for you.
Okay. Speaking of that, and speaking of awkward, Heather's a great,
I think,
person.
I know what you could, I think, okay, go ahead.
Heather's a great person. So she does this and, oh my God. Two summers ago, I hope the person that this happened to isn't listening. Two summers ago, we're at the beach and she goes up to a complete stranger, a female who's just wading in the water, knee deep, looking after her kids who are playing in the water, and goes, I'm sorry. I don't know how else to say this, but your string is hanging out. Her tampon string was hanging out through her bathing suit. And the worst part about it was, the woman wasn't like, oh my god, I can't believe it. I'm so, like, she just said thank you and didn't do anything. And there's
a moment of shock,
okay, and just walked away. So yes, like, that is a good person, but it can be awkward.
Absolutely. I think that's what it is. This is actually kind of fun to think about. Like, why did that moment stick with me? Cause it was a nothing moment, but I think it was that, it was just like recognizing that you actually have the power to alleviate somebody else's embarrassment, even if they're not aware that they're in a position of being embarrassed.
Yeah. I got another one, which is somebody points something out about you that, you don't like you were wrong about something or something like this, and you don't get defensive.
Yeah.
Like, people that don't get defensive when somebody is pointing out a fault, an error, a mistake, poking fun at them or whatever it is. Just having that, I guess it almost comes across as like a really quiet, subtle confidence, but that also sends us like, so somebody points out that like, hey, Patrick, when you speak, you X, Y, and Z, and you're just like, oh, that's cool to hear. Thanks. You're like, oh man, Patrick's a cool person. As opposed to somebody that gets really defensive about things, or somebody like can confront somebody about like a political view or whatever it is. And somebody that's just like, doesn't fight it, just kind of like is really accepting of that. I think that's another small, oddly specific indicator of a good person.
I agree. I like that. Okay. Next one. We got two more. What are the two types of people?
I love that. So your turn.
What are the two types of people? Okay. So I've got, I think I came up with two, though there's infinite numbers. And I thought of you, because I think this is one way that you and I are very different. And it's the type of people or the type of person who, when like a computer or your phone is like, hey, you've got an update. The two types of people are, I avoid that at all costs, I do it immediately. And I'm of the latter type. It's actually, sometimes it causes me a headache because I'll update something and then I won't be able to use the computer for like 30 minutes. And I'm like, why? I did not need to update, but there's something in me that's like, I have to update to the latest version possible as quickly as possible. And I know I've seen your computer before and it's been like 17 versions old. So I know that you are not of the same.
I am a complete laggard because I'm a technology adaptation laggard. It's only when I'm absolutely forced to will I do that.
Yeah.
Yeah, oh so that was God, my first so one. Good, Patrick. I like that one.
The second one is something I actually use a lot when talking about branding or talking with folks about branding, which is imagine yourself in a city you've never been in before and you want to get a cup of coffee. So you pull open, you know, Google Maps or whatever, you type in, you know, coffee shops near me. And you've got, you know, if you're in a relatively busy city, you've got two or three options. And one of those options is always Starbucks. And one of those options, if you're in the Northeast, might be Dunkin' Donuts. And another option might be some coffee shop you've never heard of before. There are, depending on who you are, depending on the type of person you are, depending on how you see yourself will determine which of those three you are willing to go to. If everything else being equal, right? Not to say like you've got to walk 17 miles to go to one, but there are people who will only go to a Starbucks because Dunkin' Donuts coffee tastes terrible. There are people who only go to Dunkin' Donuts because Starbucks coffee is way too expensive for coffee. And then there are the type of people who I don't ever want to go to Starbucks or Dunkin' Donuts. Damn you. I'm going to the cool coffee shop on the corner with the funky music and the tattooed baristas because that's the kind of person I am. And I want to reflect my own identity through the decisions that I make. And so that to me is a huge one. It's a good, like I said, a good branding exercise or good branding lesson, but it's also genuinely, are you the type of person who chooses Starbucks, Dunkin' Donuts, or some funky little coffee shop that nobody's ever heard of before? So technically that's the three types of people, but I'm going.
I love your answers. They're so much more specific than what I'm going to say. And they're so much more fun. So I thought of it as basically, I think there's two types of people. There are drains and fountains. There are people that bring energy to your life and suck energy from you. There are people that make your life easier, more enjoyable. They're awesome to be around. And then there's the opposite. You know, I think that that's, you almost call it like it's an assets and liabilities type thing. That there's people in your life that you are so glad that they are part of your life. They enhance it. They make it better. They're just that. They're fountains. They fill you up. And then there is the opposite. There's the people that, you know, whether they're walking into your class as a coach or you see the text message or the email from them or you see, you're like, oh, man. And that's, gosh, I hope I'm always looked at as a fountain to the people that are meaningful in my life.
Yeah. I was thinking about something similar to that recently. I don't know why I started thinking about cynical people, but I think one of the biggest drains, at least for me, are cynics. People who just can't see anything through a positive light, who constantly are focused on the negative and constantly focused on what's wrong. And I was just thinking about like one of the best, you know, happiness hacks, if you want to call that, is just like make a list of the 10 people you spend the most time with and circle the one or two that are the most cynical and just reduce the amount of time you spend near them. And you'll just be significantly happier. some, and again, for the reasons you just laid out, like some people, and I just think cynicism is one of the, again, for me, is one of the biggest drains. I would just stay away.
Yeah.
If you can't, figure out
in general for me, I cannot be around people that complain. And this is actually, we never even talked about this, Heather and I, but, in terms of like, this is a filter system we're going to use for the people.
Yep.
But, when we meet people, for the first time, we're like, we could hang out with them. Like, that's cool. Like, yeah. And then we like, they don't complain. It's literally like, that's like, it's the first thing that like, it's either like, maybe that's the two body people. It's complainers and non-complainers.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, that's such a big one is, you know, we met this, couple that we went skiing with, that we met up there. Our daughter and their daughter are like really good friends and we just have to be at the mountain at the same time. So the daughters met up. So we ended up skiing with them. We hung out with them afterwards for a little bit in the lodge. And we got done. We're like, oh my God, that's so awesome. Like, cause what most people, to your point, I should say most people, what a lot of people do is the way they create conversation is by pointing out negatives of so many different things.
Yep.
And man, that's draining.
Yeah.
It kind of goes back to that. Eleanor Roosevelt quote, you know, which is small people talk about other people. Mm. Average minds talk about events and great minds talk about ideas.
Yep.
Well, it's hard to be, you know, like it's so easy when you talk about other people, like complain about like, you know, you talk to like, you meet other couples and they complain about their in-laws. They complain about the teachers. It's like, whoa, drain. And we just make the Heather and I make this decision right then. We're like, they're out. Like, we're not gonna do it.
Yeah.
Or if they're not that, then we're like consciously like, let's pull them in.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's pull them in. I like that.
Yeah.
They're ours now.
They could be in the bubble.
That's right. All right. Love that. I fully concur that is a good practice to do. Last one we've got. I'm actually really excited to hear your answer on this. What is the number one rule in your moral code? I go first, but I'm going to make you go first.
I think I go first now. Yeah.
Okay, good. Cause I kind of want to hear your answer.
This is like, it's one of the things that I've operated by for a long time. It's do the right thing regardless.
Yep.
And I know you've heard me say that. It's actually a big part of the business seminar presentations I used to do is I believe that's the definition of integrity. If you live your life with integrity, man, it just takes a lot of the weight off of your shoulders. It's honestly, it makes life so much simpler and easier. So if you do the right things for the right people, for the right reasons, but it's doing the right thing regardless. And that's like, it's just popping into my head right now. So it's basically unconditional integrity.
Mm.
Right? That's basically what it is. It's like, no matter what, you do the right thing. And that's no matter how small or big and hard it is. So the right thing, you know, when you leave Whole Foods and you put you wheel the cart out and you put your bags in your car, the right thing to do, no matter how small it is, the right thing to do is to wheel the cart back to the little cart storage living corral area. That's the right thing to do. Yes, it's harder. Yes, it's going to take more time, but it's the right thing to do regardless. Regardless if anyone's going to see it, regardless if anybody's impacted by this, but it's the right thing to do. Maybe that's why I like the picking up the trash thing. And I like the if you find money, you return it type thing.
Yep.
But it's also no matter how big or hard it is. So if an employee is not meeting your expectations, what's the easy thing to do? It's, well, maybe they'll just get better tomorrow. And then you just keep on having that conversation with yourself and your team or whatever it is. And you never do the actual right thing, which is to have the hard conversation about them not meeting expectations. But that is the right thing to do, no matter how hard it is to do it. And I think that is a moral compass that I hope to continue to lead the way that I try to navigate life. And certainly not perfect with it at all. And definitely struggle with the small and the big things, you know, so a small thing, I don't think it's right to, stay up late. You know, mm-hmm. I think it's not right to miss a day of training. I don't think it's right to not hug and kiss my kids when I come home. It's like, you just kind of use that as a way to like, what is the right thing to do right now? And I think it's a good moral compass of which we can use to navigate the world with.
Yeah, that's really cool. I hadn't thought about integrity in quite that much, maybe nuance or depth, like the idea of like, you don't skip a training session or you like all these things. Like there are, when looked at through that filter, there are right and wrongs. And maybe there's a lot of gray in there, but like, should I train or should I not train? Well, the right answer is yes.
Yeah.
Right. So looking at it through that, it's interesting because you don't really think about integrity that way. You think about integrity in like that kind of classic, like sort of how you started it, like do the right thing. But then really when it's like, well, what does that mean? What is the right thing in this situation when it's not 800, you didn't find $800 on the ground, right? Like it's not that black and white as to what the right thing is. That's cool. I like that. Let me ask you this before, because I was thinking about this and quite frankly, like I asked this because the term, the idea of a moral code is not really something I've ever thought of before. It's like, it's not a phrase I've thought of. It's not a thought exercise that I've had. So I say that to just ask, like, when you think about moral code, quote unquote, is that the same thing that we've talked about a lot, whether it's like values or whether it's principles, whatever name you want to give it, do you look at those kind of things as synonyms, or is there something about this idea of a moral code that is either different or nuanced or something else?
I think it's a sibling in the same family. I don't think it means the exact same thing. Values are truly like what's important to you. You know, that's what it is. It's like, it's what I value. I value the life of animals. So I'm a vegetarian. That's not me, but that is people. I value, leaving the earth a better place than I found it. So I'm a green activist. Like that's what they're values. Principles are even closer to a moral compass and moral code in my mind. Principles are the guideposts for that determine your actions, decisions, and behaviors. Mm-hmm. So it's essentially like you establish the principles of which you're going to operate by. And that is a principle might be like the customer is always right. You know, I don't believe that, but if that's a principle you believe in, it helps a lot of decisions along the way if you have that principle. Another principle might be like in the military, like do not shoot unless fired upon. Like, okay, there's a principle like that you can just like lay out to your team, and now you don't have these like trigger happy, you know, 20 somethings going and like blowing up the village. So principles can help guide actions, decisions, and behaviors. A moral code or a moral compass is kind of like your personal belief and ethos system. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, it is what do you say is right and wrong? Mm-hmm. And having a strong moral compass in my mind of knowing what is the North Star that is right for you, again, helps with a lot of the way we navigate life. And the more that we become self-aware of these things ahead of time, it simplifies life a lot, because you then come up against these really tough, hard decisions of, you know, which I'm helping some of my friends go through right now, of like, should I stay together with my wife or not? Yeah. Like, that's a really hard thing to do unless you create some things ahead of time. Yep. Like if you don't know what it is you value, what it is you want out of your life, it's tough. Like if you say like, no, it's about, you know, forever means forever. My word is my bond. I committed this in the face of God. Like, okay, that's one thing. If it's no, I want to live my life with passion and fervor and you know, and excitement and love, and I don't want to settle for anything. Mm-hmm. Okay, and that's another thing. And if you understand what those things are ahead of time, it can aid in some really tough points. You know, understanding that if you put your team above profits, well, that's what I believe. I believe that we should take care of our team before we look at the bottom line. So when COVID hit and we had to decide whether to furlough, fire, or pay, that was a really hard decision until I realized that decision had already been made beforehand. And it was, we're going to continue to pay until we no longer can. Mm-hmm. So it just kind of helps along with those. I think a moral code, a moral compass is, again, just one of those beacons that help guide you when the seas get rougher.
Yeah. Cool. All right. Well, I'll give you my answer with the caveat being that this is the beginning of my thinking through a moral code and what that looks like. But as I was thinking about it, I thought about values, because that's sort of just where I started. And one of, you know, I've got a couple of values that I've sort of stress tested over the years. And one of them is generosity. And so as I started thinking about a moral code, the first thing that came to mind is, or the thing that came to mind is that my number one rule is to always be generous.
Love that.
And I think that when I think about my life, when I think about the times that I've done things that have made me the most proud, it was always on the back of my choosing to be generous when I didn't have to, maybe, which I guess is kind of part and parcel of what generosity is, right? You don't have to be generous. Mm-hmm. And so I guess, you know, thinking about what a moral code is, thinking about kind of everything you just said, I think to me that feels like what would be number one is to always be generous. And that's generous with time, generous with whatever knowledge I've been able to glean, generous with my attention, generous with my patience, generous with my money. And continuing, you know, I kind of love what you just said. Like, that's a really good, in the same way that thinking about it, integrity, like, yeah, integrity, there's an easy answer of integrity. Like, everybody kind of knows, is the shopping cart thing, leaving a, that's easy. Like, I can see that, but integrity can go through lots of different, avenues, lots of different channels, lots of different opportunities in life. And if you're always constantly saying, what is the answer here? What is my choice here? That is the most, that I can say I've chosen with the most integrity. I think you can do the same with generosity. And how and where and can I continue to look at opportunities and say, well, what is the most generous option that I have here? And can I do that? Can I act with generosity?
Wow. I love that. I really love that. You know, I create it creates a through line for me. So do the right things, regardless, right people, right reasons. And this idea of generosity, gleaning what you've learned, giving up your time. I actually, as you were talking, it's the reason we never really talk about this, but it's the reason that we've never done sponsorships and advertisements on this podcast because it never felt right. Yep. And we wanted to be generous. Yep. And we've had the opportunity for some really, I mean, people reach out a lot to sponsor the podcast. And when I listen to other people's podcasts, I don't like it when there's an ad. And I don't want there to be that moment where people are, you know, it kind of brings me back to a little bit of like the early days of CrossFit. You know, when they said, and I didn't really, I'm actually formulating this in real time as we're talking about right now. When Greg Glassman, as crazy as he was, when he said no to money, and he did it all the time. And then he would spend money just to like stick it to people that are sticking to others, you know, $3 million lawsuit against, you know, Gatorade, just to say like Gatorade isn't healthy, just to do it. Like, you know, the vigilante aspect, like, but man, that kind of like, they're not taking the corporate dollars. They're being incredibly generous with their time, knowledge. They give it away for free. I think it just lended to a more trustworthy platform. And I'm actually formulating this right now. Maybe that's, and I'm guessing that's the reason, that's a big reason that I don't want to take endorsement deals on this podcast, is because I want people to believe that what we're saying is truly coming from the heart and doesn't have a secondary agenda. Mm-hmm. And I never want that feeling for anybody to feel like, I'm not doing this for the right reasons. I'm not doing this right regardless.
Yep.
And being generous with this time offering what we have to share with other people, even if there is, we're foregoing some other opportunities.
Yeah. Yeah. It's it's interesting. I agree with you that there is a lot of, again, you said that, you know, the caveat of Greg, like all, you know, taking him in totality, one of the things he always was incredibly generous. And I think that that generosity was imbued in the company, in the brand, from the early days. And you know what I think is interesting, and this isn't the point of it, and it's not my experience of it, and it's not why I do it, and I know it's not why anybody who's generous does it, but I've found that there's almost never any downside to generosity. In fact, mm-hmm. I almost always find upside to generosity. Again, not the point. I'm not doing it with the idea that I'm going to get something out of this eventually, right? It's not that. But like I honestly I haven't thought about this in a while, but in many ways, I thought about it because, you know, as you were talking about the podcast, this podcast, in many ways, and I don't know if you'll remember this, this podcast exists because I chose, well, gosh, many, many years ago now to choose to be generous towards you when I didn't have to. You didn't expect it. You didn't ask for it, but it was the, I think about this, I haven't thought about it for a while, but I thought about it a lot in the years after. But you did your first affiliate seminar there at CrossFit. At least I think it was the first. Maybe it was the second. Maybe you're still testing it out. But I filmed it. I was like, hey, I can come film it. I maybe make some videos for HQ. That was kind of part of what I did at, again, Faster. And so I stood in the back. I filmed the whole thing. And then I remember it was maybe that night or the day after or whatever. I sent you you didn't ask for it. It might have been obnoxious to receive. But I sent you like a 3,000-word email of like, here's my thoughts on the seminar, because it was still early. I knew you were still developing and formulating it. Didn't expect anything from it. There was no ask. I was just like, if this is at all useful to you, here you go. And we never talked about it again. It was, again, I didn't have it asked. There was no point to it. But I genuinely believe that that moment when I came to you 3, 4, 5 years later to talk about whether or not there was something we could do to work together, what eventually became the immersion program and eventually became this podcast, I think you were more than happy to sit down with me, because in the back of your mind, we had that moment of, well, shit, like he can't be that bad. He sent me 3,000 words trying to help me make the seminar better, right? And again, I don't think that was conscious. I don't think you sat down and said, weighed the pros and cons of should I give him an hour of my time? But I do believe that like that was a big reason why you were receptive to, well, you sure, yeah, come on over. We can chat about what you're thinking about, right?
Just like from a subconscious level, we're always doing this fight or flight, parasympathetic, sympathetic nervous system, fight or flight, or rest and relax. We're also on a subconscious level, always trying to measure friend or foe.
Yeah. Interesting.
Yep. And we are constantly trying to put people in, we need to know that. Like if I turn my back, are they going to attack me, or are they somebody I can trust inherently no matter what? And from a subconscious level, your acts of generosity are doing exactly that. They're just filing away in other people's subconscious, like friend, trust. Yeah, that's really cool, Patrick.
Yeah. So anyways, that's fun to think about. I haven't thought about it for a little bit. All right, my friend, that was really fun. 5 questions. I like these episodes. I hope folks like them as well. If you have questions out there that you want us to throw into the bin, again, I usually just grab them randomly from Reddit. So if you have a good one that kind of fits into this model, into this format where Ben and I can kind of hash back and forth just to see if we agree, find me on Instagram, PS Cummings, send me a DM. Otherwise, thank you for listening. Thank you for your ratings and your reviews. Ben and I will be back next week for another episode of Chasing Excellence. You can get every episode of Chasing Excellence wherever you listen to your podcasts or on YouTube. Until next time, thank you for listening.